too many companies don't appreciate is the amount of effort and time and planning it takes when you take a company that never had a system to a new system. Now you take a company that's had one ERP, but 15 other point solutions out there. Just imagine when you talk about data and integration, what that means when you have 500 web apps out there.
Yeah.
Those are 500 databases out there potentially. Yeah. We're now consolidating into one. So you talk about data conversion, that's what integration is all about.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at the independent ERP and digital transformation consulting firm, Elevate IQ. Technology has matured, but the fundamental issues are still the same, regardless of whether SaaS is going to take over the world or not. The success rate with ERP implementation might not change unless companies embrace critical steps required to be successful with ERP projects. The process starts with aligning various organizational functions and data silos, which is not as simple as technology integration. They require mindset and business model changes essential to the success of ERP programs. In today's episode, our guest, Joel Schneider, discusses why process integration requires enterprise alignment. He also discusses why companies struggle with ERP implementation, even though the technology has become advanced and easier to use. Finally, he discusses several ERP implementation concepts and stories. Let me introduce Joel to you. Joel has 25 years of ERP experience for mid-market manufacturing and distribution companies throughout the US. His company provides IT consulting to help companies improve their operations and increase profitability through the use of technology and improved business processes. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hey, Joel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And it's always exciting when we have ERP peers. You know, obviously, you have been doing this forever, I guess. I don't know how many years. Can you still count?
It's been quite a while. But yes, I've been doing this since 1995. So this is 28 years of doing ERP consulting. So it's almost before ERP was ERP.
Yeah, so I think we are going to do a little journey there. Obviously, you probably know a lot more. Just to kick things off, do you want to start with your personal story and current focus, Joel?
Well, there's not much. Well, thank you. There's not much to the personal story. I think I'd rather start with my professional career.
Okay.
After graduating college, I started work as a programmer. Back in the day, we were called programmers and not software developers.
Yep.
So, you know, working on your typical mid-range systems, the IBM mid-range, IBM 34, 36, 38, Hewlett Packard, if everyone remembers Hewlett Packard mid-range systems, and DEC Digital Equipment Corporation, and a bunch of other mid-range systems doing programming. So back in the day, we were writing basic systems that we now take for granted. It could be general ledger, accounting, inventory, purchasing, shipping, receiving. Back then, there were no packages out there that you could just buy. So we were the people actually writing custom code for our clients to meet their specific needs. And typically, this was the first generation automation and systems that they were getting. So it was, we were on the forefront, and it was really exciting times back then.
Yeah, and that was rocket science back then. But believe it or not, in 2023 as well, I don't know if people really understand what general ledger means, I guess. We are still teaching them.
Well, the good news is my background is both finance, accounting, as well as general business and technology. You know, I don't think we called it IT back in college. I think it was called computer science. So I have a minor in computer science, which provided me the ability to go write a general business application.
Yeah. So very fun. So, all right. So Joel, before we start peeling layers overall in terms of the ERP journey, I guess we have one of these standard questions that we ask every single guest, and that is going to be your perspective on business growth.
On business growth?
Yeah.
So you're talking about the ERP industry as well as our consulting business. Well, for the past 28 years, it's been constant. It's been exciting and good growth for the past 25 plus years. There were some times when it was, you know, dicey back in 99, 2000 after the dot-com crash. People got scared, weren't investing in systems and automation. But other than that, even the 2006-2007 financial crisis, it's been going up every year, which has been a great industry to be in. So from a consulting perspective, as you can see from the big consulting firms, they've been growing like crazy, adding more people. Revenue is in the tens of billions of dollars. And then the smaller independent consulting firms like ours, we've been continuing to grow. And for the past 5 years, it's been nonstop growth. I'm sure, Sam, you know it as well as I do. We've chatted, other than this, we've chatted and talked about just how crazy busy we've all been. And the challenge over the past 5 years is not necessarily getting business, which is always a challenge, but it's finding talent. So finding talent is what the game has been all about for the past 5 years. But yes, for 25 years in a row, we've had steady growth with a couple hiccups, but other than that, it's been really good. And I think that mirrors, by the way, the software industry itself, whether it's the generic ERP software solution providers, industry specific software systems, niche products, they've all been growing, especially since around 2000 when products went from on-prem to cloud. That whole migration has been just a boom for the industry. And it's good to be part of it because it's exciting. And not just exciting from the industry perspective, but it's the excitement to help our clients improve their business operations.
Yeah, could not agree more. I think great points there. So now let's go back and let's look at the journey of ERP overall, right? I mean, you have seen a lot. So let's talk about how it started. You know, what were the challenges back then with businesses? Do you see any sort of improvement right now? I mean, the foundational challenges are always going to be the same because they are related to people, I guess. I don't know whether you agree with that or not. So related to the evolution, so maybe shed some light there in terms of how the space has evolved. And what I'm really interested in knowing is how the challenges have evolved.
Right. So if you go back into the early days of ERP, it really wasn't ERP. It was cobbled together systems. Could be general ledger that talks to accounts payable that had a purchasing and sales order app with inventory. They really weren't completely integrated. So back then, you were able to get a few systems that worked together, but you were still developing a lot of software around it to make it work. There was still software development, software programming to make software really do what you needed to do. So back in the day, there was more immature systems. So what I mean by mature software is software has gotten very functional and very deep, which is both a curse and a blessing. It's very deep, so it could do a lot of things, but that's the blessing. The curse is it could do so much. You have to spend so much time configuring the software that you're now taking a package that you used to put in months, and now it's taken 6 months, 9 months, 12 months because of all the settings and flags and business processes that you have to review. So the good news is you could buy any one of a number of good standard ERP packages, and they could do a lot. So the big difference from 25 years ago is the maturity level of the software, the maturity level of the people implementing it. We now have standard processes that to manage the implementation. Documentation is there. And there are some level of best practices that are out there to help implement it. So it's a world of difference from the old MRP days to ERP. So back then it was MRP, then MRP2, now into fully integrated ERP solution.
Okay, so I'm going to peel some layers there based on that commentary, right? So based on you know, what you described, that overall, you know, from the technology perspective, the software has been evolved. We have best practices. But in our experience, when we look at the implementation and when we are comparing, okay, which implementation really worked and which failed, regardless of the advancement in technology, I guess, the fundamental challenges are always going to be the same. You know, there is a little bit of trend there overall in terms of why people struggle with these implementation, right? So do you think that the overall, and you also mentioned that the consulting industry is growing. There is a reason why it is growing because the problems are far more, even though the technology has been advanced. So tell us more. I mean, what's going on here?
So that is, you're honing in on the real issue. So if you think back 25 years ago, when you put a solution in for a client, it was in a box, easier to do, more confined, more straightforward. And the people, the roles, to get it done were much more straightforward. It wasn't as complex. When you talk about a big system that touches everybody, you have to talk about leadership for the company. You have to get the CEO on board. You have to get the head of operations, the head of finance, the head of sales, the head of procurement. You have to get the whole company behind it. So it's a larger company initiative than what it was before. So the complexity, why it takes so long, Sam, is because it's a wider net that you now have to contain. So it's not like you're putting in a general ledger system or a purchasing system or an inventory, even something like a point specific solution, like a warranty solution.
Yeah.
These are all now integrated. So you have to get everyone involved in the company. It's a bigger effort, takes more time, takes more money. Consulting goes up. Consulting time goes up, right? Because now, and consulting is both our consulting time and the software vendor's consulting time. It's not just us. Consulting is a generic word, which includes software vendors. So now they're spending more time. So it's not like you could say, how do I configure my purchasing application? Because it's directly integrated with inventory, customer service, sales, receiving, quality, all the way up and down the line. So it's a much larger initiative and strategic initiative for a company to tackle than ever before.
Okay, so we are going to peel some more layers there. You know how I work, right?
we're digging down, right, Sam? We're digging down.
Digging down, right? We need to know everything, I guess, right? That's how we are as ERP consultants, right? So in this particular case, you mentioned that integration, right? And that's a big piece. And obviously, you know, when you have technology advancement, there is a lot of noise in the market, Joel. I'm pretty sure you sort of hear these stories and you are like, okay, this is amusing for me, you know, whatever people are talking about. And one of the things that we are hearing in the market, hey, SaaS is going to take over the world. And obviously, they don't really understand integration if they are going to claim that SaaS is going to take over the world, right? So you mentioned, you know what, the purchasing need to be integrated with your inventory, that probably need to be integrated with your finance. So describe what is integration, let's say, if a business person does not really understand. And by the way, integration could mean a lot of different things as well. You have technical integration, you have process integration, you have financial, so many different layers there, right? So maybe describe a little bit for the business owner.
So integration is much like you hear the word digital transformation, which is an overused word that everyone likes to throw out. Integration is another one of those words. So like you said, integration means a lot of things to different people. But at the most basic level, and this goes back 30 years ago, were the rules of databases. The rules of database was data normalization. You only had the same piece of master data in only one table, never to be replicated across the enterprise. So you have one customer, one supplier, one part, one bill of material, one routing, your standard master tables. Integration means if I'm taking a customer order, I'm looking up the same customer information that everyone else sees when he orders that part. It's the same part from the same supplier, possibly the same supplier. So they're talking about data normalization and standardization. And this is another reason why projects have become more complex and take more time. You go back 30 years ago, like I said in the very beginning, these were companies' first forays into technology. We didn't worry about data conversion and data migration. Now companies have had 30 years of history from multiple systems. So now when you talk about integration, this is what it comes down to. I've got 10 systems that I'm putting into one. I've got to normalize that data. I got to scrub that data. I got to clean that data. Got to put it in one system. And then I got to make sure it's the right data in one table across the enterprise for those master tables. This is the other part that too many companies don't appreciate, is the amount of effort and time and planning it takes when you take a company that never had a system to a new system. That was cool. That was great. Now you take a company that's had, you know, one ERP, but 15 other point solutions out there. I actually have one client today that has 500 web apps that are being replaced by one or potentially one ERP system. Just imagine when you talk about data and integration, what that means when you have 500 web apps out there. Those are 500 databases out there potentially. We're now consolidating into one. So you talk about data conversion. That's what integration is all about. How do we do that? And how does everyone get on board and see how that's going to benefit us? It's a huge issue. It's a huge issue.
So Joel, done roughly what, 600 interviews right now on this podcast, okay? And the ERP ones are always my favorite one. and the reason for that is because I get to have fun, right? I am asking the same question that I'm always asked, right? So that's the fun part for me. So right now, let's say I'm the business owner And I'm trying to figure out why is it so hard to take out that data, migrate, map. If I go to my reseller, you know, they are claiming that this is all easy. I've done it all. You know, it's going to work magically. There is no problem here. Okay. So why is it so hard to consolidate those 10 databases and create one?
Well, I'll give you the answer I know you're expecting. When the vendor says it's easy, it's magical, I'd say, cool, do it. Look at your watch and say it should be done in about 10 minutes, right? It's not going to get done in 10 minutes. Your question is why?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
It's because those 10 systems have 10 different processes that are completely different.
Yep.
10 different definitions, every data element or data field that's out there. And no one knows what is what. And then the third level behind it is when those systems were written, the person who actually designed it, developed it, wrote it is probably gone. So when you ask somebody what's behind the scenes, what's under the cover, that person's been gone. He's been retired. He left the company. So there's very few legacy software systems that have that documentation behind it that says, we have this little app over here, and it has a customer information in it.
Yeah.
What customer? Where do you get that customer information? The other part is you've heard things like data management and things like that. Overused words again, but that comes in. I've got 10 applications, and I've got 10 databases of customer information. You have to ask the client, where do you populate this from? How do you enter a new client into that database? And don't you do it in the other 9 databases at the same time? So when you talk about these databases and somebody enters a new customer, they put it in that application. The question is, why don't they put them in the other 9? How do the other 9 get populated? Where do they come from? Who authorizes that? So data management is a big issue. And now you have to clean up 10 different ways of doing something into one consolidated way. So it's not just data. It's business processes that are behind the scene. How did this person enter this customer master information into that small database? Does it update the main database? How does billing get infected? How about terms? Too many companies have all these disparate systems and they work, but if they were integrated, you could actually save time, save money, and make it more efficient. But Sam, that's where you go to your first question. That's where all the consulting comes in, right?
Yep.
That's why the consulting industry is going up like a hockey stick, because over 30 years, customers have built 20, 30, 40, 50 different systems to support their business. And then some software vendor says, I've got a great idea. Let's put it into one.
Yep.
And the software vendor says, and I've got a magic tool that can consolidate all this information.
Yep.
Show me that magic tool. Show me that magic tool. I haven't found it yet.
So I'm actually going to show you one magic tool, okay? And I'm pretty sure you are going to have a trick there as well. So here is the scenario for a customer, okay? So the customer really gets it, you know, they want to do ERP. They really want to do it. They want to integrate the processes as well. They can see benefit of really integrating the data. Okay, they have, let's say, 10 different systems. They want to consolidate 9. They can see value in that. One of that is not changing. So out of the 10 systems that we have, okay, they want to integrate 9.
Mm-hmm.
One is not changing.
Right.
Okay. And Joel, you know that this is probably going to disrupt the whole model. You know, let's say they are not changing. They are going to say, you know what? I don't know. Maybe I had this external MRP system that I had created because I never believed that the MRP system that exists in the world are going to work for my business. It's a very special business.
Because they're special, right?
Exactly.
So in reality, all businesses do something unique, something different, but they're also have a lot of generic to them, right? Yep. So the question is, what is so special about that one system that that group of people say, change all those other 9 things? They're not changing mine. So that's where you dig in and you have to ask some very difficult questions. And that's where you need leadership to come in. That's where the client leadership needs to come in and say, we need to talk about all 10 systems. All 10 are on the table to be changed, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where leadership comes in and saying, we're going to make that change. Sometimes, believe it or not, everyone isn't going to be happy.
Yeah, so now let's explore the scenario, okay? So what if leadership is actually pushing for that system, okay? Because Joel, if this is going to be my baby, you don't get to call it ugly, okay? Because this is my baby.
Exactly.
So let's say if leadership is really passionate about that system and they are not willing to change that, and as the ERP consultant, you know that if you assumed that risk, either the implementation is going to fail or it is going to cost $1 million, somehow the business is not really seeing that. So what do you typically do in those scenarios? Let's say if a business is really struggling in that.
So what we do is we find out why. So as you know, it takes three whys to get to the right answer.
Yeah.
Why don't they want to change that one system? Because we've always done it that way.
Yeah.
Okay, I get that. Let's move on. Then we ask the same question a little bit differently, but it's also about why to get under the cover. Tell me why you've been doing it this way for the last 20 years. Usually they'll come up with an answer like, that's the way I was trained.
Yep.
Cool. And that's the way the documentation is. Fabulous. Who trained you? Bob. Really? Let's talk to Bob. Oh my gosh, Bob retired 15 years ago. Well, then we say, have you thought about different ways to do things? And usually somebody will say, yes, I've always wanted to do it better. I said, this is the opportunity. We could all get together and improve it. And you don't want to say, let's throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? You don't want to say the baby's ugly. You say, that's great. How can we improve your system and still play with the big system, the new system? And usually they'll come around to saying, you mean that new system can do that? I didn't know it could do that. So once again, if they're part of the process, but sometimes groups have to be, some groups come along, some people are just on the bandwagon and some are more laggards.
Yeah.
So we need to pay more attention to the laggards because they have a large voice and they could be vocal.
Yep.
And they're the ones that might be disruptors.
Yep.
As you go forward. And we need to identify those and mitigate those disruptors.
Okay, so very interesting. So now let's go back to your stories. I think you wanted to cover two stories, right? Success and failure. But I'm going to have a little twist there, okay, in those stories. So what I really want is the most challenging success story and most challenging failure story. And talk about the challenges and what were the challenges and how you sort of overcame.
Well, been doing it for 25 years, it's hard to pick just one challenging success story. We've always felt the more challenging client, the better. They're the ones that are going to make us a better consultant, and it's going to be a better solution. So those are the clients that we love. But there was a client, happens to be in Illinois, about $1 billion company. They had two divisions, a $500 million division and a separate $500 million division. The president of the company asked us to help them evaluate, select, and then implement a new system for one of the $500 million divisions.
Yep.
And it just so happened they picked out a different consulting firm to do the other $500 million division. And they are separate divisions. One did steel components and stuff like that. The other did electrical components.
Yeah.
So they were a little bit different, but they had shared services in the middle.
Yeah.
We went along our process, helped select a system, and we did it the traditional way. We got a steering committee, a project team, had good governance, had leadership, had a great project kickoff, got more people involved in the process. We tried to mitigate all the issues that could come up in the process before they happened.
Yeah.
We went through it. We selected a solution. We negotiated the contract and actually managed the implementation. But we did that in a couple of ways. The software vendor was very involved in the implementation. But what we did in the first part of the process is we did what we called business process reengineering across the board. We documented not just current state, but future state. And here was the twist to it. Not really a twist. It's not secret sauce, because more people should do this.
Yeah.
Is we included the software vendor in the business process reengineering session. So we talked about future state. We did not do it in a vacuum. We did it with the software vendor, and we're talking about, I take an order, I do it over here, I create an Excel spreadsheet, I send it to these 13 people, they do this, whatever, whatever. We had the software vendor in the room, and they're going, oh my God, I've got this feature in my system that if we do that, we could save you four steps. Too many times a software vendor will come along, and they will ask their customer, what do you do and how you do it? And then you see him clicking on the keyboard like this to configure the software. That's the wrong way to do it. That's the recipe for disaster. You've got to get the cross-functional teams in the room, led by an outside facilitator, it happened to be us, to talk about future state business process across work streams, not by department, across work streams with the software vendor. We were then able to implement a new system with improved business processes all across the board. And we went live on the new system. It took about 9 months. It's a Yeah. Large company at 8 locations across the United States. So we did all 8 plants across the United States. And we went live before the other consulting firm even picked out the new system. And the reason is they went down the traditional path of software versus getting in and understanding the business and understanding operations versus feature and function. Too many times you get bogged down in feature function game and not talking about business operations and business process and business improvement. So that was a great success story. Obviously, I keep in touch with them. They've grown tremendously. And we learned afterwards they fired that other consulting firm and took their system that we help implement and put it on that other $500 million division. Now they have one system for the $1+ billion division. And it's quite a success. It really is. But it's a different approach.
It is a different approach. So you said you involved the software vendor, you know, in this particular process. So some follow-up questions, I guess, on that story, right? So the software vendor was involved after the selection. Were you guys brought in after the selection? Were you guys involved also for selection? Give me some more colors there, I guess, in the story.
So we were involved in the software selection.
Okay.
Obviously, vendors did their demonstration process and all that kind of stuff. At implementation, in the very beginning, we did business process future state.
Yes.
That's when we got the selected software vendor deeply, not just on the surface, deeply. So they were with us for weeks as we went through these sessions.
Yeah.
And it made the implementation go so much faster and smoother.
Yeah.
And they didn't have to repeat everything when they went to, you know, somebody in customer service and say, what do you do?
Yeah.
We had this all laid out. It was all documented. It's a completely different way of doing it. And the feedback we get from software vendors when we do this is, I wish every firm did it this way.
Yep.
And that's a good feeling. Unfortunately, not everyone does it. And some software vendors say, hey, get out of the way. Thanks for picking us. Let's go do this. And they go, wait a minute. Let's talk about business operations, business process, business procedures.
Yeah.
And not feature function or setting flags. That to me is the benefit if you do it correctly.
Yeah, no, could not agree more. I think great approach overall. I think that's how everybody should do it. But we all know that that's not how things go, I guess.
Correct. So, you know, we've had some challenging situations, obviously.
Yeah.
Everyone has challenging situations.
Yeah.
We had a client in Chicago. I didn't want to say what place they were in, but okay, they were in Chicago.
Yeah.
And we went through the process to select a software, and the CFO said, you guys are great. We love you guys. We're not going with your recommendation. I'm going with this other product I like. And he got wowed by the salesperson.
Yeah.
A real concern is that software salesmen, software individuals, doesn't have to be a man, woman, are very, very good at their job. I'm talking very good at the job. And they are able to convince many customers to buy their software because they're motivated by making the sale. We're motivated by finding the right fit as independent consulting firm. That's what's important. So they went down the path. They bought that other software system. And 6 months into it, they found out it looked good. It really did. It looked good, but didn't do what they needed to do. And it was an abject failure. They called us up, not 6 months later. They needed to rest on it. Called us up about a year later and say, we would like to restart that. And we picked up where we left off with the selection process, selected a new system only 2 months later. They went live on the new system in about 9 months. It's good for every client to make the final decision. As a matter of fact, it's critical that every client makes the final decision. But you have to make the decisions based upon objective criteria. And one of the things we do up front is we document objective selection criteria.
Yeah.
So it doesn't become a subjective decision. It's not what vendor brings the best donuts to the demo. And believe me, we've seen some vendors go out of their way.
That should be criteria. Come on, Joel. What are you talking about?
I actually had one software vendor. I hate to digress, but I've got to. I had one software vendor bring to a demonstration. Ever see one of those chocolate fountains that have the chocolate flowing off and then you put your strawberries and bananas in there so you get chocolate? That's what they brought to the demonstration.
That's it. The deal is done.
The client goes, how do we not buy this software? I said, eat the chocolate covered strawberries. We'll talk later about whether it's the right fit for you. So software salesmen are really good at what they do. Objective criteria up front, you have to define it. The team needs to agree upon it. And then as you evaluate it, you have objective scoring as you go through it.
Yeah.
And that's what we use, objective scoring. That doesn't mean there's no subjectivity involved.
Yeah.
Look and feel, user interface, the personalities of the team, of the software vendor team, those are important and they are decision criteria. But let's make sure we're making the right decisions for the right reason.
Okay, so let's talk about the challenges, I guess, in these two stories. So obviously the stories are great. There's no, I mean, we have one success, one, we have one, failure one as well. So let's say, and again, your life has been full of challenges. Kudos to you. You probably survived for 28 years. I don't know if I'm going to get there, to be honest. Okay, so challenges. I mean, and these are real challenges. They give you a lot of stress, okay? You smile all the time. I don't know if you picked up this after that. Okay, I've already spent like 20 years and I'm only going to smile from now on. But life could be real stressful in the consulting jobs. And the reason for that is because you have political factors, you know, from all over the places, right? I mean, it's going to be software vendors, people are fighting with each other. There are real issues. And sometimes, I mean, that could be a language issues as well. They are saying ERP, but they don't mean ERP. They mean something else. So talk about some challenges too.
So, as with any project, I don't care if it's a technology project, an ERP project, building a house, remodeling your house with your spouse, the challenges are all the same.
Yeah.
And usually it comes down to communications. If you don't have a clear process of communications and how it's going to be handled, you're getting to an argument. The argument could be with your spouse about, I thought the house was going to be green and she painted it yellow. Well, I thought we agreed upon green. No, I don't remember agreeing to that. So you have
not
to have
that green, okay?
So I don't care what the project, communications are critical, and you have to make sure they're clear without gobbledygook.
Yeah.
I hate to use a technical word, but gobbledygook is the worst. Be very direct,
yeah.
Be very clear. And here's the other thing. Most people don't do this. Write it down and communicate it to others. So you could tell somebody, we agreed on the green wall. And the person says, yep, green wall it is. But if you don't write it down, how does the contractor know what green you're going to get?
Yep.
And the contractor can be a software vendor. How did the CEO know we're going with the green wall? Same with ERP software system. Clear communications.
Yeah.
They have to be written. They have to be communicated. And concisely, don't do long stories. Don't do long stories. And make sure they're done on a regular basis. If you have infrequent meetings, that doesn't work. And a meeting could be 10 minutes long about the decisions that are made. So when you do a project, you have to write it down and disseminate the information and meet on a regular basis. Could be weekly, 10 minutes. Make sure everyone's on the same page. And by the way, that includes the CEO, the CFO, the COO, the project sponsor, the project manager, the subject matter experts, everyone on the project team. Clear, concise, direct, and including the software vendor. That way they know what we're going to achieve. So there's some basic rules of success. Communication is number one. Number two, top management commitment. Three, project scope. Man, if you are managing a project and you don't have tight control over that scope, we're going to have another webinar on that because that is another recipe for disaster. And the ability for the steering committee to say no to most every request. So that steering committee needs to be empowered to say no, not just yes. And no, by the way, is to changes to the system or any type of budget, unless it's something that comes up. But those are some three basic tests.
No, I completely agree. I mean, these are great, great advice. So let's take this to another level, right? Typically, when we compare this with, let's say, house, things are a little easier, to be completely honest. And the reason for that is because people can sort of understand what is happening. Okay, green versus that green versus, sure, I get it, okay? In the ERP world, even the experienced consultants miss things, okay? And I'm one of them, okay? It's not that, I mean, you are always going to know what you are doing, I guess, because these things are complex. It's very, very, very hard to understand the implications, okay, of the decisions that you are making. And obviously, customers don't know what they don't know. It's very, very, very hard for them to visualize. And sometimes you are going to communicate right very clearly, going to communicate everything. Okay, no. You have to do MRP. But they are not understanding why the hell they have to do MRP. Okay. And they are not understanding the implications of these decisions.
So there's a couple things you mentioned. One is using the house as the analogy. How many times have you watched a show on television where the contractor says, it's going to cost more because I didn't know what was behind that wall.
Yep.
You know, they break the wall down and they go, I don't know what was behind the wall. How many times have you heard that? In the ERP world, the software vendor says, I don't know what's behind that wall. I didn't know what was there. My answer to that is, what word can I use? Bull poopy. How about another word like that? That's crap. Of course you know what's behind the wall, because if you did your homework up front, you know what's behind that wall. And if you do your homework, that shouldn't happen. So when I hear that, that software vendor hasn't done the job. They're just looking for excuses. So that's really the wrong thing. This is not building a house. This is, you know what's behind the wall. How many times have you done an ERP project? 600 times? I've done it 600 times. We know how to do this. We know the implication of all these different systems that they have. And if you do your homework up front, you know what's around the corner. Isn't that the whole idea of good project management? What's around the corner? Don't tell me these are the tasks we did last week and we're on track and on schedule. That's scorekeeping. That's administration. Good project management is to anticipate issues, talk to the people, get them resolved. So when that weekly meeting comes around on Friday or Monday, whenever they happen, you could say, we identified a potential issue. We resolved it. And now we're back on track. That's good project management. That's good ERP implementations. Don't tell me about scorekeeping on a Microsoft schedule that says Billy didn't do their task 11.3.2.4 on Tuesday and now the project's late. What good is that doing? Calling out Billy for not doing his job? Come on. That's hard.
So let's take one more scenario, Joel, okay? So now I'm the CEO of Elevate IQ, and I'm hiring you for the ERP project of Elevate IQ. And I'm the CEO, so obviously I need to make all of the decisions, I guess, right? And since I have not done any ERP implementation, I guess, in my life, it's going to be hard for me to understand all of the implications and make all of those decisions, right? I'm trying to figure this out, but I'm just confused in terms of what needs to be done. You are trying to tell me, you know, what needs to be done, but I'm just confused. Okay, sometimes I'm going to make some decisions which I'm not sure if I'm in the right direction or not. Okay, so how would you control this situation as a project manager? Because even if you try to convince me, it's not going to go, I guess.
Well, I'm not sure. So using you as an example is probably not a good example because you do know what you're doing. But to give you a real life example, I'm in Detroit right now talking to a client that's just today signed their agreements for a new system.
Yep.
They haven't done this project in 30 years.
Yep.
So how do we become the CEO's trusted advisor?
Yeah.
You don't do it on day one of the project. That's all the pre-work we've done for the past 6 months, guiding them through the process, being their trusted advisor, and helping them answer the questions and the challenges the best way forward. And the challenges are usually around communications and people. So when they say, in order to put the system in 9 months or whatever the time frame is, I've got to allocate all these people. And the CEO goes, there's no way you're going to allocate all those people. So the good consultant will be advising that CEO 6 months ago, in order to be successful, here's the resources that need to be allocated to the project. Here's the roles you're going to have. And here's what you have to do to backfill those roles if you need to. So these should not become as surprises. When you go to a CEO and you've got a surprise or something like that, you haven't done your job. So there should be no surprises at an ERP implementation. That's the thing that drives me crazy with software vendors. Oh my God, who knew? You knew. We knew. We just need to communicate. We need to do our job.
Yep.
And that's a challenge for the consultants. We need to do our job better.
Yeah, could not agree more.
There should be no surprises. Should be no surprises. And, you know, sometimes we take over a failed implementation. We did one in St. Louis where the software vendor just said, we're going to do this. They didn't do it, but worse, they assumed, don't you love that word? You assume?
Yeah.
They assumed the client was going to do all these tasks.
Perfect.
Here's the issue. Here's the issue. When a software vendor assigns tasks to their customer to do, that customer hasn't done it ever before.
Exactly.
How do they know what to do?
Exactly.
You could say, do this, this, and this. And they're going to say, you got it. I'll do it. And they're going to be deer in the headlight. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it well. They're not going to do it right. And the project's going to get delayed.
Yep.
So understanding what a task means versus just assigning a task is the difference between a good consultant and just one reading a script. And too many times consultants are reading a script and checking a box. Told the client they had to take their data from their old legacy system, put it into this Excel so we could do some data migration. What's the client supposed to do? They don't even know the first thing about what to do.
Yep.
So you can never assume, and too many mid-market ERP packages. You've mentioned it before. It's all SaaS. It's in the cloud. It's easy. They're being sold as it's SaaS. It's in the cloud. It's easy. Yeah, easy. I got to tell you, it's not easy. It's the same as on-premise. Maybe you don't have to spin up a server, but you have to go through all the same processes. And that's the fallacy that we're in today when it comes to SaaS software. That's a webinar for a different day, because you know as well as I do, there's a couple of software vendors out there that just say it's easy, it's quick. You know, it's that old easy button from that Office Supply store years ago. It's not. You have to go through the same steps. And that's what's disheartening, and why there's so many failed implementations, is setting proper expectations.
Yep.
Communications, and never assume that the customer knows how to do that task.
Yeah, exactly.
Now you got me on my soapbox, Sam, so I shouldn't have done it.
Enough fun for me, I guess. I had so much fun. Okay, so now we are going to do a little bit of closing advice, I guess, for our listeners.
Cool.
I don't know if you're going to have anything.
So the closing advice is, before embarking on a project, appreciate what it's going to take to be successful. Hire outside advisors. You hire outside advisors for most everything else. There's nothing wrong with hiring an outside advisor. Even if you use that advisor just for guidance versus active, they'll understand the major steps to go through, the major pitfalls, the risks, and the opportunities for success. So in summary, these are complex solutions that are integrated and have, before you spend money, companies are going to spend tens of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars.
Yep.
Make sure you appreciate what it's going to take to be successful. Don't do this on a shoestring. Put that complete budget together, budget together, including the resources it's going to take, and have a realistic plan to achieve success.
Yeah, could not agree more. And my personal takeaway from this conversation is also going to be, appreciate the process. Don't underestimate the efforts involved. If you do that, it's probably going to fire back. On that note, Joel, thank you so much for your time. This has been a fascinating episode.
Sam, thank you very much. I look forward to speaking with you again. Take care.
Of course.
Bye-bye.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you would like to learn more about Joel, head over to rubinbrown.com. It's RubinBrown.com. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform, or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to get you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.